Okay.
Today, today is Saturday, October 21, 2023. This is a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Alice Talakte. Alice spells her last name T-A-L-A-K-T-E. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Alice. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Great. Alice, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you. And I want to mention there is a reverb problem in this phone line. Alice lives in Page or near Page, and the phone's there. There's a reverb problem, so that's going to be recorded in the interview. Alice, could you tell us where you were born and what year you were born?
Okay, well, first of all, in the Navajo, we usually introduce ourselves to our clans.
Thank you.
The clans that we belong to. I am Tsotki Ani, which means near the mountain people, and that's my family site. And my grandfather, my mother's father, is Tapaha, and then my father is Sitnachini, and he was born from Bintatoni. So that's who I am. That's what defines me. I was born in March 25th of 1941. On the reservation, about a mile and a half or so south of the Peak Cut on 89, and that's where my family lived. And I guess it was spring was a cold day. So I usually just say sometimes I say, "Who were you born under a tree?" But that is not so. I was born in the Hokan, and my grandmother was assisted in delivering all of her grandchildren and a lot of other children.
Wow.
She delivered me. Usually, my mother never really tells when she's feeling. She tell one of the kids, the last minute, say, "Go get your grandmother." It got to the point where they know what it means. Run as fast as you can.
Oh.
So, anyway, so that's how I was born.
So, Alice, at the big cut on Highway 89, down below is Bitter Springs.
Yes.
Were you up on top, or were you down below?
No, we were on top.
Okay.
And there's some buttes in there, and kind of like, if you go on a dirt road off 89, there from the junction, there are some really nice buttes back in there. So I think it was the first butte in there that's where I was born. There's nothing that indicate that they ever lived there, but that's what my sister told me, that's where I was born.
Okay, lovely. And was this the traditional homeland area for your family?
Pardon me, I'm sorry?
Was this the traditional homeland area where your mother and father were?
Yes. Well, what it is that my grandmother, my mom's mom, moved in from somewhere up the Four Corner area, and her father was... Her father was my auntie, excuse me, which is part of one of the Pueblo tribes. So she was born somewhere in the Four Corner area.
Okay.
And eventually migrated to the Four Mountains, to the Black Mountains, and then eventually into the Grand Canyon area, Gray Mountain area, and that's where my mother was born. And 1906, there on the south side of LCR. So, and then from there, she married the tribe from, or the clan from around Coppermine area, who was Hapaha, and you, so she married into that family, and that's why they migrated to, they moved into that area, so that became part of her, her homeland.
What was your mother's name?
Her name was Martha. She was a name, another name, but after my father registered her name as Martha Spencer. Well, she's a Lon. That's my grandmother's name was Alice. We all was named after Alice Lon, and her name was originally her name was Lucille Lon. Changed to Martha Spencer when she got married.
And what was your father's name?
My father's name was John Spencer. And he was born in these areas here. So my parental folks have always more or less have been around in that area.
Okay.
Probably from the mid-1800s. Maybe from the early 1800s.
Okay. And if the land below the cut is called Bitter Springs,
right?
What is the land above the cut where you were born? What's that called?
Well, we just have the cliff is known. Well, the trails that was you. There are two trails, and they're called Jadahabatin. And that means antelope trail, and then the ridge through there is the Marble Canyon or the cliffs, and those are they have different names at different sections.
Okay.
Either where the trails were, and it's just called now you got me. The Navajo name slipped my mind, but anyway, it's called more or less the south side of the cliffs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that in the Bodaway Gap chapter?
No, we are in the Coppermine chapter.
Coppermine chapter, thank you.
Yeah, the Bodaway chapter is down below.
Okay.
Below the cliffs, yeah, along 89 and all of that, so.
Okay. Do you know how your mom met your dad?
It traditionally does not work that way. Traditionally, marriage were arranged.
Oh.
And you never seen or never met your husband-to-be until the wedding. So my mother's marriage was arranged by my father's people and commissioned with her mother. So they got married somewhere in the late 1920s.
Okay.
And I asked my mom, I said, what did Dad look like? And that was tall. And she said, well, and he had a lot of pimples. So they were together for a long time, but eventually back in the mid-60s, they separated.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Do
you have any other family stories about your grandmother or your mother and father that you'd want to share?
Well, my grandmother was a very independent person, I guess, because her mother was not exactly what a mother should be. And so she mostly stayed with her aunt and in that area, but her her mother tried to, instead of the other way around, she tried to make an arrangement for her daughter marriage, but my grandmother just did not want to do it. She would run away from home, stay away for a couple of days, and then go back to her aunt. And so she didn't get married until her aunt was married to one of my grandfather, my grandmother's husband's brother, and and that's how she knew him. He was married into the family, too, but when his wife passed away, they got together and married, and she, because of their children.
Okay.
And then he, in turn, passed away, so, another brother was still survived, and his wife died, too, so, and then she married him, and that's who she stayed with. And my grandfather died somewhere in the early 1920s.
Okay.
Yeah. And my, what was about my father?
Yeah.
My father was also the only child of my grandmother, whose name was Rose. And she, I don't know, maybe she just had a kid, and that was my dad. And she was not really treated well, so she also, he also grew up, went to his grandma or to one of his aunts.
Okay.
And then somewhere in the 19, the highway was in the, was being worked and in, you know, the one that you showed there the other night?
Yeah.
Well, he would move down there because one of the aunts lived down there. And I'm sorry. He would stay down there because, and then his mother was with another man, and they didn't treat him well. So that's why she stayed away. And by the time he was, in his, somewhere along the line, he ran away, was walking along the highway, and somebody picked him up, but he didn't know any English, and they took him to Lee's Ferry, and I guess he kind of did some chores there around there. And that was one of Charles Spencer's crew. And so when his uncle took him to Tuba to enroll him in school, he didn't have an English name. So they named, okay, one fellow before him was, maybe two fellows before being enrolled before him was, one of them was John. He said, okay, your name is going to be John. And then he remembered the name Spencer and said, John Spencer. So that's how he got his English name.
Okay.
And he went to school in Phoenix. And he was probably in his mid-teens or somewhere, but he said he played football. And he injured his hand, his shoulder, and had to be treated, so he couldn't play anymore. And he didn't graduate from high school, and that's why once he came home, he started seeking different jobs at different places. He pretty much traveled all over the Southwest and the Midwest for jobs, either coal mine, railroad, anything.
Okay.
Even down Mexico. And so, and then since he was in Mexico and in California, when there's a movie, old movies that were being made, he played an extra in some of the movies where they have Indians in it.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was, I guess, just about a man of all trades, including an extra.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did he talk about what he remembered of Lee's Ferry back in the days of the Spencer operation?
Yes, he remember he worked there for until he was alone in school and earned us a little bit of money, which he didn't know what it was. And then they had to teach him, you know, because he said, I never knew I had money. I didn't know what it was used for.
Huh.
He remembered a little bit. And then we used to move down, even after we used to move down there, because their plants, and the salt wheat, were down there, and it's just like feeding animals, your sheep and horses.
Okay.
Kind of like a natural supplement, and water our animals at Bitter Springs. There's a spring there. As a matter of fact, there were two springs.
Okay.
And they would spend a few days down there while the animals feed on the salt meat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So that was fun because I used to go down there. And the trail coming down just above where the landslide was, not really, but kind of about halfway, there's a trail down there. I used to walk barefoot down there.
Wow.
Today I can't even do it. After I got married, it took me twice. I did the first trail first, and then went home. We got home. We left for home, and then the next time, well, I was with my son. We hiked from the highway up to the top. Yes, it used to take me a day following sheep and went with no shoes. You're laughing about it. Yes.
Yeah. So, how many sheep would you be herding at any one time?
Back in the time when I was, it was probably around about maybe less than 100.
Okay.
But my father had a lot of goats, and so we used a lot of goat milk. I grew up on goat's milk, and she had a lot of goats. I don't know, maybe about 50. That's a lot of goats and sheep. And they usually do not stay together. The goats will have their own trail down the... They know they were going to the water, but they follow the warm trail, and they'll get there and meet the rest of the herd. And then going back up, they go up their own trail. I found it was pretty difficult because goats can jump from steep locks to another, and I couldn't do that. So anyway, so I would say maybe about just a little bit over 100, I think, so I'm not too sure.
And would you take them down to the springs for water? What, once a week, or how often did that happen?
Well, up on top there also are earthen dam and natural dams.
Oh.
Some of the earthen dams were made by my grandfather's, my Tupaha chase. It's because they were out there, and they have a big field in one area. So they were farmers, and they were ranchers, and nobody had cows at that time except them. They have cows, too, so that's why they have to make these water holes and earthen dams.
Okay.
So when there's less water up on top, it takes about 2 days because it used to rain a bit then, and maybe about 2 days. Every 2 days, we would take the sheep down. And if they don't really want to go down the trail, then we just say, okay, we're not going down today.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would you get involved in the shearing of the wool from the sheep?
My folks and mom and grandma and older sisters sheared the sheep. I did not. So the thing I did is I got interested in horses.
Ah.
So when my brother, older brother, was not there, who also took care of the horses a lot, I appointed myself to take care of the horses. And so every morning I would get up and go after the horses. So that got me out of cooking, learning to cook. So, like shearing in the spring, butchering a sheep. I said that my job is more important. I got to find the horses.
Okay. How old were you then?
This was back in the 19, I had to be around in 1950s. So I was around about, I didn't go to school until I was about 11 years old, and then the war of English. And so from about the age of 7, I start sneaking around horses, even though I was told not to. And but my grandmother knew, but she never told on me. My mother and my other sister would say, "Do not mess around with the horses because they're not really tame."
Hmm.
Well, I think they got used to me, and they were good with me.
Oh, nice. And when would you say, how old were you when you felt like you were a good rider, a good horse rider?
Well, when we were living at near the place where I was born, we used to live there in the summertime, and I was around about maybe 10.
Okay.
And I owned the horses, and I didn't have to. I couldn't carry the ropes or the bridle because I would get caught because they knew where I was going. So they used the woven wool yarn to hubble them up.
Okay.
So I used that to put on one of the mares, a buckskin mare, and it wasn't long enough to put it around her nose. So, and then they start walking towards the cliff, and there was that one trail, just it came right above the landslide and then on down. It was more difficult. There was one place where there was a slick rock sticking out, and the horses have to jump, so they have to know what they're doing to go down and to come up.
Wow.
So they took me down there, and I held on to her mane for dear life.
Oh.
And then they came back, and they had their water, and then we came back up. But my grandmother knew what I did. And so this is where you're saying, she knew what I did. So she never told on me.
Nice.
So then I think I was learning to handle the horses. And since I went around barefoot a lot, I used my toes and my toe necks to get on their knees and hop on them. So my husband later on called that my crap toes.
Oh.
And I could even pick up things with it.
And Alice, I know the answer to this, but could you tell us how tall you are?
I am 5'1".
5'1".
5'1", yeah.
Okay, so I just have a vision. When you were 10, you probably weren't 5 feet yet.
Not yet, no.
And these horses are pretty tall.
Well, the horses, our horses, some of them were tall, some of them were not. This buckskin mare, she was a little bit taller, but then if you get on, if I put my crab toes on her knees, a joint, I could push myself up, and she wouldn't do anything. She would just stand still.
Nice. That's lovely.
Yeah.
And would you grab her mane then to pull up?
Yeah, I held on to everything I can find.
Okay. Oh, that's lovely. Very nice. And
yeah.
Where did you go to school then when you were 11?
My father enrolled me at Tudor City Boarding School.
Okay.
And by then I was, he was in the fall when I was 11. And he enrolled me there, and then they asked all these questions, my age and stuff like that. And I didn't have any English clothes. I was wearing my Navajo clothes that my sister made for me. And I didn't have extras either, or maybe I had about a couple of blouses and a couple of skirts, and they were not something that I would wear at school eventually. But anyway, they asked me about what religions you were going to join. Since my father had been to school at Phoenix, he said they would name Catholics like that. He called them long coats or long skirts. So he said, no Catholic, no long skirts, no long shirts. And Mormons, no gamelo. And they said, Presbyterian. So, and I now today I say I'm a Presbyterian Baptist.
Okay. And were you looking forward to going to school? Was that something that you wanted to do?
Well, I was kind of excited about it until we got there and everything was so foreign to me. And that kind of frightened me and I'm thinking, what am I doing? I just want to go home.
Oh.
So, and then the BIA vehicles come around and they pick up the children. It was a truck, usually. So we had to stay in the back of the truck and a bunch of lessons. When I got there, they tell me that I talk a lot and I ask questions and I tell stories. And when I got to school, you cannot get a word out of me. I was so shy. And, of course, becoming homesick right away, missing family.
Yeah.
And missing everything. And so the dormitory was just born and beds. We didn't have beds. My bed at home was sheepskin, so I missed that. And the metal beds with thin blankets, they were cold. And I wished it for my sheepskin bedding. So missed my grandmother most because when I had disagreement with my mom, or when I'm naughty and my mom's following me out, I would go to grandma's for a couple of days. They live right there nearby, but I would stay there, and a couple of days later I'd come back and as if nothing had happened.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, that's normal. Yeah. Did you settle in then at Tuba City eventually? How did that go?
Well, eventually I did settle in, and going to class was, well, I got some clothes probably issued by the government, some dresses, and I didn't like them either because the skirts were short, and most of the time even the sleeves were short. And I get cold real easy, so I didn't like them. But I had to do them anyway. And eventually I got used to it, to the school. And it took time, you know. And I was able to make friends. And some of the kids were from my around Coppermine area.
Okay.
And so knew them. But I was a pretty quiet. The first year I was there, I was pretty quiet. No trouble out of me.
Okay. And did you like your teachers?
Pardon me?
What
teachers?
Did you connect with any of your teachers there?
Oh, well, the first year my teacher was a white lady. She was not really that friendly, never smiled. And if you did something wrong, you know, she would kind of like look at you. But the only thing is I never got hit with her ruler. And, you know, that's what I read a lot about. Maybe I don't remember. I don't know. I just didn't. The second year I went back, I have teachers who were Japanese.
Oh.
And all of them because they said that I looked like one of their relatives.
Oh.
Some of these Asians tell us that we look more like Asians than Navajos and being small things. So Miss Atto and Miss Kopiya, she was my favorite teachers there.
What do you remember about them?
Well, I remember that they were really nice and they would explain what they want you to do and even show you. So that is how I began to pick up more English, and my writing was really bad. I didn't learn how to write my name until around about that time. And after my first year at school, one time we went to Flagstaff with my mom and dad, and my father said, okay, you order for us. And I was sitting there. All I know is hamburger. true. I have a lot of hamburgers in my life when I was younger. Hamburgers and fries. But anyway, it was so funny. That was what I ordered in the morning to my mom and my dad. My dad, you know, he just let me because I guess he said, you're going to have to learn. And that kind of like, you know, kind of like, okay, maybe I will. Like I said, I already had delusion in the morning.
Alice, what do you remember about your first visits to Flagstaff?
My first visit to Flagstaff was with my dad. My father eventually was hired as a Navajo PD, Navajo police and ranger, depending on what of the incidents that he was sent to investigate or to see and stuff like that. So he had a vehicle. He was stationed, well, his office was into the city. So my going to town was like, it was just so foreign to me. I was so shy. And, of course, I went back into wearing my Navajo clothes. So it was just foreign to me.
Okay.
Yeah. But then my family also went to Utah, southern Utah, Richville, Price, and other towns in the after the farms like sugar beets and all of that had been planted, and they went there. Navajos were hired to weed, keep the weeds out of the field.
Okay.
So that was also some of my first town there. A time and being away from home and being in another different environment, being among the white people and towns and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We had a small house where we lived, where the workers live, and they usually sometimes supply there was no running water because they told us not to use the irrigation water, just for washing and stuff like that. But
mm-hmm.
not so they usually the owners usually bring water, and sometimes they even brought food. So one time, my sister was going to make, you know, you had to have flour and all the other to make fried bread or Navajo bread. So she opened a sack and. And there was just snake in there. And after that, they refused to get anything from the farmer.
Oh.
I don't know how the snake got into the flour sack. Somehow crawled in, I guess. But and after that, we said, nope. We'll buy our own.
Oh, my.
That was kind of fun.
And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have, let me see. My older sister, Mary, passed away, and then Connie, she's 90 years old now, and then Jamie is about 3 years older than me. So I have three older sisters, and I have an older brother, and then my younger sisters is Lou and Katie and Bessie, so... I have three others, but my parents lost three boys in infancy, and the little girl that they lost was in 1947. She passed away after she had pneumonia.
Okay.
So I remember that.
And what stories do you have of your brothers and sisters when you were a little girl?
What was the question, the first word?
Just do you have any stories that you recall about your brothers and sisters when you were a little girl?
Well, my older sister, Mary, she was, she took care of pretty much all the younger ones, and she was probably one of the nicest sisters that I have. And then the other two older ones kind of stuck together. As usual, in some, you know, sibling, there's always like, well, I got blamed for a lot of things, which I'm going to like, which today would be like, what?
Oh.
And then my brother also taught me some, you know, wood chopping, and eventually told me how to care for some of the horses. They were a little bit too spooky at times, or had to get used to me. So they were, and then my younger sister, who was about 3 years older or younger than me, and so I ended up taking care of them as they were growing up. And so I babysat a lot, and during the summertime, our families, or most of the families, we have some kind of ceremonies going on.
Okay.
Maybe the enemy way dance or some other activities, and everybody went in to help. So my family, my mother and grandmother and little sister would go there, and I end up babysitting. So I probably was not a very good babysitter.
Why not?
Well, they were younger, and of course I wanted to do things my way. And sometimes they wouldn't agree with me, or they don't want to. So my sister Lita, and you were bossy.
Oh.
And sometimes leave some other, my father's sisters, half-sisters, niece and nephew would also stay with me. So I was kind of like, them. I have to be, in order for me to be in control, I guess you might say I kind of became a bully. I fought with my boy cousins and told them and wouldn't feed them until they were nice about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because
okay.
Most of the time I couldn't cook, but my family would leave enough cooked food already prepared there for us. Yeah, sometimes my other cousins would get in and eat the food before I knew what was happening.
Oops.
They were in trouble with me then. Yeah. So that was kind of fun, though.
Uh-huh. Tell me about it.
Well, it was fun because a lot of some of these boy cousins were... they were mostly boys. I hung around with them, and we used to climb trees that were young trees, especially the juniper. They're very springy if they're young, and we would climb up there and put a rope around it, pull it down, and we sat on, and then we let go and hang on to for dear life. And then we got shot into the bushes. And of course, it's where you tore up a lot of your clothes, too.
let me make sure I understand this. So you would tie a rope on a branch.
And one of the branch that is kind of like, you know, kind of a slim branch.
Yep.
It has a thin, and it's springy, because the older ones are not going to be in it. So the younger branches will be tied up. The rope too, and then somebody would climb up, and you hold on to with your hand and your legs, and then they let the rope go, and you go flying into the bushes. Good thing we didn't knock our eyes or got knocked out by the branches.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! Sort of a human catapult.
Yeah. Yeah.
What fun!
Yeah, that was fun. And then we race and things like that, just make toys out of shaping rocks.
Okay.
And animals. Since I knew how to find horses by knowing what their tracks look like, and I was the one who would make rocks with, you know, kind of shaped like a horse hoof. And we play with that, and then we have our mud available. We make kind of a ceramic type, but it wasn't ceramic. We did it ourselves, and they broke easy too into animals and just different things. And then our other toys was the juniper berries. no cage bought for us. So, and then the other one is that we would find piles of rocks right out there, and we collected the smaller ones, the pretty ones for our sheep, and the larger one for our horses. Mm. And we would trade back and forth. You know, look, yeah, I want your black horse, which we use a black buck. So we, those were the fun times. There were no toys bought for us, but when my father came home, he might bring something. But that probably it disappeared. Somebody destroyed it. So, and then he would buy. I had bought plates, and this is in the 40s, and I found a piece, just a piece of a plate one time, and I look at it. This was just a few years ago, and I said, "Oh my God, if this was whole, it would be an antique thing."
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, and then our grinding, we grind corn too, using mano a matate.
Okay.
And in our language, it is sadashtu and sadashtun. And these are the ones that were found at the ruin sites. And there's plenty of ruins right out there.
Okay.
So that's where we found those tools and used it to grind corn. And then my grandmother was telling me one time, because they usually say, do not pick up the pot shards, you know, and don't do anything because it belonged to the people that were here in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Say my grandmother was telling a story about, yeah, we used to make potteries, and we grind the pot shards to help stabilize the clay. And then I looked at her and says, but you keep telling us not to pick those things.
What did she say?
She said, well, this was to be used again.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Do you remember how she would fire her pots?
She fired her pots. She really didn't make it, I think. She built a fire and brought not your juniper wood, but there's another type of plants out there, the saltbush.
Okay.
She would get the old stems from it,
mm-hmm.
and she said that was hotter than, even with a small amount, it was hotter than the regular juniper wood. So
okay.
She would use that. And then I think she piled dirt on, wet dirt on top of it, and had it in there, have it in there for a while. She didn't, I didn't see her. And of course, she made these pots for different uses.
Mm.
By when one of her relatives, who is maybe, we call it the medicine man, they would ask her, say, well, I used to have this, but it got broken and I need a new one. And she would make them. But she really didn't invite me, or invited us to. She kind of did it in secret type, you know, because we're not supposed to know some of these things, I guess. And then I decided, okay, I will not ask too many questions.
Okay.
Yeah. And?
So, Tuba City, you were there at 11 and 12. Did you graduate from school there at Tuba City?
No. There's 1 year I didn't go back to school. That's when it was in 1950. 51. I didn't go back to school because I, like I said, I didn't like it. And the reason why I didn't like it, besides what I mentioned before, the kids would steal. My
Ooh.
Aunt and my uncle live in Flagstaff. They work at they live in Belmont and work there because he's a serviceman before. So
okay,
she would bring me maybe some candy or a jar, a face cream jar, and I would put it in my locker, but we didn't have locks. Or any way to close. And then the very same day it would be missing. Oh, that made me so furious.
Oh, wow.
Stealing. To steal. Especially if they remember from you, and you knew that they did, so, but they were older, so I didn't challenge them.
Yeah.
But either, yes, I did. And then sometimes my parents or some of my relatives would stop by, and they would bring us tortilla, Navajo tortilla,
mm-hmm.
and fried. Or maybe we love mutton because it's what we grew up on.
Mm-hmm.
Roasted mutton and bring it in for our snacks. And I would try to hide it in my locker, but was not successful because it was gone by the end of the day.
No.
I didn't like that. So I didn't go back to school, so I held it at home. And again, work with horses and pretty much trained one a horse that somebody gave to my dad or really didn't belong to anybody. So I rode that a lot. And eventually, I don't know what happened to him. Maybe the owner found him and took him back.
Where would you go riding?
Pardon me?
Where would you go riding?
There's a lot of places to ride, even riding horses on herding sheep. They're around the cliffs and then back up towards Coppermine.
Okay.
And sometimes I would get with my other cousins and we would race horses.
Ooh.
Stuff like that. And then when my dad said, well, there was a mission school there too, the missionaries moved into Coppermine area, and they built their church and then wanted to run a day school. So that's where I went. And I used to ride a horse there in the morning. It was about 3 miles.
Okay.
From our Hogan to the school. So I rode horses, and the missionary had two kids. The girl was probably younger than me, the boy older than me, and they have horses too. And I don't know where they were from. I don't remember. They told me, but I didn't remember where they were from.
Mm-hmm.
And in the afternoon, after lunch, they settled their horses and we went riding. Didn't go back to school for the afternoon. So one day I have a quarter or something, and we went to the trading post to buy some candy bar. And my father was there. So I got caught.
Oh, no.
And after that, I walked to school.
Oh.
Yeah, my riding a horse to school was the privilege was taken away.
Oh.
Yeah. But he was, you know, I didn't mind because I walk all the time, too.
Well, I'm thinking that going to school there would have been nicer because you were with family every day.
Yeah, I was a family every day, but then, you know, with two other Lakana kids, the missionaries' kids, you know, they said, let's go for a ride. There are buttes around Coppermine. We climbed that, we were with different places, and we played, and just stuff like that. So I didn't learn much.
Well, it sounds like you had a good time.
I had a good time, but then that fall, my father said, you had to go back to school. So I told him, I don't want to go to Tuba. And I told him, so I wanted to. By then, my older sisters were going to boarding Indian schools up in Kansas and Oklahoma.
Okay.
And so I said, I want to go some. By then, I wanted to go somewhere, you know, kind of like I wanted to see the country.
Hmm.
So I asked my dad, I don't want to go back to Tuba, enroll me somewhere. And then a friend of mine said, oh, go to Chemawa, Oregon, Chemawa Indian School, that's so beautiful. So I told my dad to enroll me there. He did. And by then I was like 14.
Okay.
And you're supposed to be 15 before you go off the reservation boarding school. I told my dad, don't say I'm 14 because they're going to put me back in Tuba, and I didn't want that. So when they asked me how old I was, I said 15. And of course, I lied there. And so I went to Chumawa Indian School in near Salem, Oregon.
Wow, what was that like?
Oh, that, I don't know. We took a bus and took us for about 2 nights and 2 days, and we left, and we had to go to 5-7 on the old highway.
Were you alone on that bus ride?
No. There was a bunch of kids.
Okay.
A lot of them. No, it was a bus full from all different areas.
Okay.
Around in a Western reservation. But anyway, so there was a bunch of, and I think we stopped in Las Vegas, had our breakfast there, and then we traveled again. We stopped somewhere else. I don't know if there was our lunch. No, I think our lunch were packed, so that was given to us on the bus. I've seen trees, you know, really green fir trees, pine trees, and Flagstaff. Well, this place was just, you know, you can't. There was no flat land that you can see. It was just weeds.
Wow.
Weeds, and I was excited about that. And by then, I was not shy anymore. So I went there from 1954, and then a couple of years later, 1955, that summer when I was home, I was riding a horse, and I wasn't even running it. Somehow it just fell.
Oh.
I was riding bareback.
Okay.
And I fell over her head.
Oh.
And she fell on me. And I guess I fell into a cactus.
Oh!
I don't know how long. My sister Bessie, she was on another horse because we went to find we were bringing the horses back in the morning. She came back and she was looking at me, and I said, I remember telling him, go home. Just go home. So she left, and the horse got up, but I held on to the reins, and then I guess I passed out, and I don't know how long I lay there. And when I woke up, oh boy, my back was like hurting. I land up in a cactus. And I finally got up and lit the horse to a piece of luck and got on that and got back on. And I told my grandmother picked those spines out of my bag and stuff like that. And a couple of days later, I could not even get up. And my mom thought I was just lazy.
Oh.
And I was, she was asking me to do this and that because since I was, my older sisters went out there, the two of them. And I was just Mary, but she took care of a lot of the animals and took care of, lived with grandma too. So that summer I was sick. And I went back to Chumawa, and I was sick. Well, I was sick, and they took me in and said, "You have your lung damage." So, what happened? So, I said, "Well, that was the only thing I remember." And then they decided maybe this is TB. You have tuberculosis. So they sent me to Tacoma, Washington, to a cemetery in there. And then I got all these medication shots. They shot you in the butt where a couple months later when you sat down, you bled.
Ooh.
And so many holes in your butt. But I was there for about a year. So I didn't come home that year. And then I went back to school and didn't come home until the second summer. And what it was that I was examined again, and I did not have tuberculosis. It was a lung damage from my lung being damaged from the horse fell on me.
Yeah.
because I was just, I mean, I was just, I was sleepy all the time, and just didn't have no energy, and thank God I went back to school, because my mom thought I was just lazy. She wanted me to do this and that. I'm glad I did. Even I didn't say anything, but I knew I just could not do it. I didn't have the strength. So, anyway, so there was 1 year, and then I went back to school at Shamawa. And eventually, in 1959, they told me, one of my teachers, my counselor, said, "You want to go to a public school?" And I said, "Oh, sure." And usually at the Indian school, those of us who are able to, we work on the weekends to earn some extra money.
Okay.
He said, "You'll be earning extra money living with a family just to look after the kids and maybe, you know, wash the dishes and take care of some house cleaning." So I went to Van Oregon and got enrolled at there, and I was there. And I have never known at that time, since I was kind of familiar with it, but there's a lot of prejudice. And I didn't like that because, you know, they just, if you're very different, since I was the only full-blooded Indian there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
I was picked on pretty much all the time. And one time I just got so mad that these boys were just laughing about me. So I come around behind them with my tray, and I decided, you know what? I'm going to fight him if I have to. And so I just pretending to be accidentally spilled my milk on him. Oh, he was mad. And I turned around to look him in the eye and spit my stance. Because by then, one of the person at the school was also teaching me something a little bit about fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of looked at me and decided not to challenge me. He probably would beat the daylight out of me. Because he was taller and all that stuff. And after that, they kind of slowed down. I didn't like it anymore. I liked the family because the only thing is that they lived way out of town, and it was a 50-mile bus ride from their home to pick up all the other kids, 50-mile round trip back to the school.
Okay.
So I told my counselor about it, and in the second semester, she enrolled me in another public school in Portland.
Ah.
So I went to school there.
What was that like?
That was a lot better because there was a lot of Japanese Americans there.
Ah.
And everybody thought that I was also a Japanese.
Okay.
This was me. And there were very few blacks. And so my last year, I went to to Grant High School. That was one of the biggest schools in Portland at that time. And again, I was pretty much everybody else, either half Indian. I was a full-blooded Indian.
Okay.
And that's where I finished my school. And then when I was going to Grant, I lived with an elderly couple. They were really, really nice. And
tell me about them.
She was older, and he was a construction worker, he owned a construction company. So he was there, and she's pretty much going all the time to these ladies' meetings or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really nice, a big house, two-story house, and I live upstairs.
Wow.
And one day, I came home and found out that I didn't have the key to the door. So I said, "How do I get in?" I don't want to do anything. There was a guy, I guess he lived down the street somewhere. He said, he told me, "Oh no, I locked my key and I can't get in." And she said, "Where's your room?" I said, "Way upstairs." He said, "Well, how can you?" I couldn't get anywhere because, and he gave me a knife, and we tied a string around it that we found. And he said, he threw the string thinking that, you know, the knife would stick into the wood near the window. It didn't work. He tried several times. And for some reason, just a good luck, I threw it as hard as I can, and it stuck right by the window.
Wow.
And then we got another rope and we found a stronger rope and tied to one of the posts, and I was able to climb up on top of the first floor roof, and then got through my window and opened the window with a knife.
Wow!
It was open anyway, so I just slipped the knife in and
to get the window to start going up.
So those are some of the funny things that that happened. So I did have a couple of friends there. Sisters that came and stopped by and walked me to school.
Nice. So,
yeah. And by then, when I was there, there were a lot of kids from Poland were coming in. Families were coming in from Poland.
Huh.
And we, quite a few of them. And they didn't speak English, so I didn't feel so bad.
Oh, nice.
And there was one guy, a big guy, always wore a leather jacket, and he has very little English, and him and I kind of looked. Sometimes he would walk by to come to the house and walk me to school.
Nice.
I don't remember his name to this day. But he was really nice. So everybody just, you know, I kept to myself, and nobody bothered me there.
And when did you graduate there from school?
In 1961.
Okay.
Yeah, and by then 1959, I was living in Portland then. That winter, my aunt wrote to the missionaries at the school, at Shumawa Indian School, because I didn't write to my aunt, the one that lived in Belmont.
Okay.
And then she told me that my grandmother had passed away.
Oh.
So she called them and wrote them. And one afternoon, the missionaries stopped by. And I was wondering why, because they took me out and they told me that my grandmother had passed away. That was the saddest thing, because my grandmother meant a lot to me.
I bet.
Yeah. And then I found out that my older brother also had an arranged marriage, and he got married. And this was in January of 1959. So that was my kind of like away from home experience, and I did save my money, so I could. At that time, the bus trip from Oregon to Flagstaff was like something like $29.
Wow!
And if I had $100, man, I had money.
Oh my!
Yeah.
Alice, we've been talking for a little over an hour.
Yeah.
Maybe now is a good time to take a break. And we'll come back and pick this up again in part two. What do you think?
Okay, so don't turn my phone off.
So what let's do is I'll finish up the interview here, but don't hang up yet, okay?
Okay.
So this will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history with Alice Talakte. Today is Saturday, October 21, 2023. My name is Tom Martin, and Alice, thank you so very much.
Okay. Thank you.